because monetary policy is tightening, we can take some of the air from this hot balloon before it actually grows too large and ends up exploding. And one of the things that might contribute to take some of the air off the market and to cool markets in the next 1 or 2 years is precisely the fact that monetary policy is headed toward tightening.
Welcome to Wealthion. I'm Wealthion founder Adam Taggart. Interest in where the housing market is headed remains red hot. Our video a few days ago with housing analyst Nicholas Jurley has been one of our most watched of the year so far. And even the Federal Reserve itself is weighing in. The Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas recently released a report titled Real-Time Market Monitoring Finds Signs of Brewing U.S. Housing Bubble. Yes, you heard that correctly. The Fed apparently sees a housing bubble. And to learn why, we're very fortunate to be speaking today with one of the authors of that report. Enrique Martinez-Garcia is a senior research economist and advisor in the research department at the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. Enrique, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Adam.
All right, Enrique, I want to talk to you about this report that you and the team there at the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas just issued. Before we get to the report, though, I just want to kick this off at a high level. What is your current assessment of the U.S. housing market?
Well, if I had to describe it with one word, I would say unprecedented. And we can get into the details of specifically why. But just to give you a sense, we have not seen rates of growth adjusted by inflation in house prices of this magnitude since the 70s, over the past 50 years. So this has been a remarkable experience that that the US has not seen for a long period of time. And that is causing a lot of concern and a lot of questions framed with one word that usually comes with unprecedented, which is the word, is this sustainable?
All right. And do you have a simple answer to that, or should we answer that as we go through our questions here? Is this sustainable?
I mean, we can go into more detail if you want. That would be great. Let me put it this way. So there are two ways in which you can make that assessment. One is you do have a sense of what house prices ought to be based on your judgment of where the demand and supply, the balance of the demand and supply is for housing markets and where it's likely headed in the future. Another way in which you can look at it is, well, for lack of a better way of explaining it, let me use a medical analogy. You can look for the symptoms to try to diagnose the problem. And the same thing like when you go to your doctor, you do your physical annual and they look for your vitals, your temperature, your blood pressure, whatever. They do blood work and whatnot. We do look for markers in the way prices have behaved that are inconsistent or odd or unusual. That's probably a better way of saying it, relative to what a normal housing market ought to behave, even in conditions where there is an imbalance between housing between housing demand and supply. And by those metrics, we would argue that there is evidence of housing fever. There is evidence that this price growth is not just unusual by historical standards, but it's unusual also relative to what we would expect or how we would expect markets to behave, unless we were in a situation where prices are growing at an explosive rate. And one of the standard explanations for that is that we might be experiencing a bubble.
Okay, all right. So we'll get more into that, your explanation for that and the causes of this. But to borrow the term you just used there, housing fever, that implies that, hey, this is something that may break at some point, that it's not a permanent level of pricing. All right, so I talked about this report that you and your team recently released here, real-time market monitoring finds signs of brewing U.S. housing bubble. In it, you write that, quote, U.S. house prices are again becoming unhinged from fundamentals. And you also say that, quote, the underlying causes of the run-up differ from those during the last housing boom. Can you explain those two statements further? What are you looking at that suggests that, prices are divorcing from fundamentals? And why is that this time different than what we saw back leading up to the 2008 housing bust?
There are similarities and there are always differences. There is very rare occasions where you see a repeat of history, and this is no exception. So let's take that as a preface for my remarks. House prices could reflect, in principle, two components. One that is fundamental based, that reflects what the conditions of the market are. This is the result of households and investors and developers making decisions about what's right for them in terms of whether to buy a house, whether to produce that house. But there is also the possibility that house prices are going to be pricing the expectation that agents place on capital gains, on future appreciations of house prices. And that is what concerns us the most, because when house prices get into a run-up, which is ultimately justified, at least while it lasts, by the expectation that somebody else will come later on that is going to be willing to pay such a high price that is going to make it worthwhile to come in now. When that happens, you end up in a situation where a lot of money, a lot of investment gets tied in an asset that is out of sync with fundamentals. Now, we don't have a precise assessment of exactly by how much that misalignment has grown over the past 2 years. We do have, as I pointed out before, symptoms that the type of behavior in house prices, the acceleration in the pace of house prices is just very unusual and by historical standards, unprecedented. But our estimation, the most conservative estimation, is that we might be seeing something like we've seen something like a 15% increase in real house prices over the past 2 years, and easily a conservative estimate would say that at least 5% of those, probably as much as 10% of those, cannot be justified with the behavior of observable fundamentals, both on the supply and demand side. Even though there are potentially fundamental causes. Differences with respect to the previous experience, I want to highlight two that to me are critical and very important. First, we are at an earlier stage. If you recall, the previous boom lasted since prices started to rise in the late 90s until 2006. It was a very long boom phase. 60% appreciation in real terms at that time. Right now, we've had 2 years of price appreciation, which in real terms amounts to a 50% increase. Very substantial, but much smaller, which means that the misalignment is also much smaller. The second important difference is that access to credit and credit conditions were very different. The current signs of the market read a lot like what the market looked in the very early 2000s. Put yourself in 2001, 2002, 2003. At that time, all the indicators were flashing red. We were seeing signs of housing fever. And increasingly, there was evidence that house prices were even outpacing the robust increase in disposable income for households. What happened then? we got into a period where interest rates remain low for a very significant period of time. There were concerns about deflation. I don't know if you recall the deflation scare of that period and those discussions. And on top of that, there was increasing financial innovation that made it possible to reach out to households with higher risk, given their financial, their own financial situation and their income profile, that those risks could be pooled and traded later on. That all facilitated access to credit at very cheap rates. Now we are at a very different phase of the cycle where monetary policy is not concerned about deflation, is actually battling, I don't have to tell you, inflation. And the path of monetary policy is headed in the opposite direction towards tightening. The expectation or the hope is that because we are at an earlier stage of the bubble, because the balance sheets of the household on average are in much better shape than they were in 2004, 2005, 2006, and because monetary policy is tightening, we can take some of the air from this hot balloon before it actually grows too large and ends up exploding. And one of the things that might contribute to take some of the air off the market and to cool markets in the next 1 or 2 years is precisely the fact that monetary policy is headed toward tightening.
Okay, great. So what I heard from you there, I'm just going to sum up kind of briefly, is investor psychology is playing a role here, you think, in sort of this, you know, begins to sort of becomes a cycle that builds on itself. You know, you buy because you think someone's going to buy the house from you later on at a higher price. The price goes up. The next person comes in with the same expectation and it kind of begins to chase its way up. As you said, it is different than the previous housing bubble. One, most importantly, from what I'm hearing you saying is because we're earlier in it here, right? So we have a chance to get it under control before it metastasizes into the huge issue that it was before. I see you nodding as I'm saying this. Credit conditions are better. In other words, we're not making those crazy loans the way that we were before. Household balance sheets are better than they were back then. And of course, as you said, also very importantly, back then we had a big focus on easing from a monetary policy standpoint. Now that is shifting into tightening, right? Which is not going to be supportive of higher home prices beforehand if the Fed really does deliver on that. Okay, so I want to talk more about the root causes of this, but really quickly, I want to talk about the indicators that you're looking at to kind of help you make this assessment of indeed, hey, we are in a bubble and it's, you know, X percent deviated from where we would expect it to be. And in your report, you have a couple of charts. You also mentioned that you guys use some more sort of novel inputs and metrics in this report. I guess, why don't we just go through them quickly in order. Your first chart here is real US housing prices, and then you have an exuberance indicator. And it looks like that exuberance indicator was at an extreme in basically late 90s through the housing bust right before the great financial crisis. It then went kind of into the basement for a number of years, began recovering in about 2018, and then recently seems to be poking back up into what I would sort of call excessive territory. Do you want to talk to that real briefly?
Yeah, that's exactly it. So in that graph, you actually see the actual data, the real house price for the US since 1975, as well as this exuberance indicator, which there is a bit of statistics on the background, a bit more than a bit actually, that we don't necessarily need to get into. But the way you would interpret it is a bit like the way you would interpret a reading for, your blood pressure, for instance. You look for how that indicator behaves relative to a certain threshold, which gives you sort of the a notion of what is likely to be considered normal versus what's statistically abnormal or unusual. And yes, the reading of that indicator is red hot. You are showing signs of what we call fever or exuberance since the beginning of the pandemic.
All right, great. And just looking at that chart, it's really, we're looking at that dotted line, that 95% confidence upper bound. When the exuberance reading goes above that, that's when you begin to say, hey, we're pretty sure that we're in territory that's not sustainable and too excessive, right?
If you want to be very technical, I mean, you say that there is statistical significance to the finding that this is an abnormal or explosive behavior in the way prices are acting up. And that's what we are seeing pointing out here.
Okay, so now we shift to the second chart, which basically shows the price to rent ratio. And you also have a price to rent ratio exuberance metric as well here. And basically, we see the same thing. We see this general same historic chart as we did, and we see it in the past year, 2 years, now poking back above that 95% statistically significant upper threshold. Anything else to say about this versus the other? I mean, obviously, price to rent. Maybe just give a quick differentiation.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. I'll reference also the third chart, which shows the price to income ratio. Apart from adjusting by inflation, the first chart looks at prices adjusting by inflation and how they have behaved. And the exuberance indicator is our measure of how they have behaved and how likely it is that they have behaved in an exuberant or explosive manner, which is the sort of symptom that we are trying to detect. Apart from that measure, we look at the price to rent ratio, which is a very basic measure of profitability of housing as an investment opportunity, and the price to income ratio, which is a measure of how affordable housing is. Imperfect in some respects, but a crude measure of affordability. And we use evidence from all three indicators and the corresponding exuberance indicators to get a sense of where housing is right now and how it's headed. If profitability is showing signs of exuberance, which is what the second chart indicates, it tells us that as an asset class, it's behaving in an abnormal way, more consistent with a bubble than with a behavior that we would expect from if prices were driven essentially just by fundamentals.
All right, great. Yes, and you then mentioned the third chart here, which was the price to income ratio, which isn't quite in bubble territory. It's not above that 95% threshold, but it's making a run for it. And one thing that you mentioned in the report, and I want to use this as a springboard into my next set of questions, is that this number is a little potentially tricky, this price to income ratio, because in recent years, household incomes have been juiced by the fiscal stimulus that was sent out to them, right? So I guess my question for you here is, had that not happened, might this already be above that 95% level? In other words, if housing prices had continued at the same trajectory, but incomes hadn't grown as much, would this ratio be worse than it looks right here?
This is a very interesting counterfactual. And let me say yes and no. Why do I say this? So I think your intuition is correct. If it had not been because of the unusually high disposable income, which is mostly through the support of the large packages of fiscal stimulus that the US have seen over the past 2 years, if it had not been for that, this ratio would be a lot higher. The price to income ratio would be a lot higher, and the exuberance indicator would be most likely already in hit territory. In fact, one of the main reasons why we wrote this piece is because last time we found ourselves in this situation was in around 2001, 2002, where real house prices and the price to rent ratio were showing signs of exuberance, the price to income ratio not yet. And what happened then is that it eventually, even the price-to-income ratio moved into exuberant territory. So we are at a that particular spot where things could potentially become fully unhinged if housing becomes unaffordably high. But I said yes and no to your question. We want to raise awareness about this, but we are also mindful that the appreciation in house prices, this 15% increase in real house prices that we've seen over the past 2 years, is not exclusively driven by a bubble or bubble-like behavior, by expectations of future appreciation, what we've been talking about. There is also a fundamental component. Early on in the pandemic, there were severe restrictions imposed on economic activity, and that limited the ability of housing supply to come in line. At the same time, there was significant economic support to households and families coming to play. So there was an imbalance between supply and demand early on that could have triggered the house price, the early rises in house prices. So what I'm trying to say is that had this fiscal stimulus not been in place, maybe we would not have seen the housing demand run so far ahead of housing supply in the early stages of the recession. And maybe we would not have seen the early increases in house prices that eventually became like a self-fulfilling, or might have become like a self-fulfilling prophecy by now. So it's hard to say what would have happened in that particular counterfactual. What is fair to say is that perhaps the magnitude and the timing of fiscal stimulus may have contributed to move us from a fundamental increase, fundamental base, mostly fundamental base house price increase to something that looks increasingly more like a bubble.
Okay, so here's where we get to the really interesting part, which is the causality of all this. You just mentioned a number of different factors I want to go through if possible.
Yes.
So, and some of them are near term. And so sort of a follow-up question is going to be, are we going to see, you know, sort of the reverse begin to happen as some of those trends play out, right? Because the fiscal stimulus has basically been turned off at this point, unless Congress passes another bill. Same thing with some of the supply chain shortages, where inventory is now beginning to hit markets that had been held up during the lockdowns. So let me see here. The factors I have here are one, kind of the investor psychology we talked about, and that gets exacerbated by the things I just mentioned, right? So as the prices, the faster the prices rise, the more the investor psychology becomes a factor. You're nodding as I'm saying this. I know you mentioned as your report is kind of a big contributing factor. Let's put that to the side for 1 second. I'm trying to figure out how to ask this question delicately, because I very much appreciate you coming on and talking about this and your work for the Federal Reserve System. We had the stimulus, right? So that's an intervention done by the government. We had the fiscal stimulus, obviously issued, you know, since the pandemic hit. That was accompanied by a bunch of monetary stimulus as well, right? And while that doesn't directly go into the economy, it does, to a certain extent, influence asset prices, and it could be seen as contributory. I would say even before the pandemic, though, we have had interest rates at historically low values for the past decade, which is conducive to higher housing prices, right? Lower mortgage rates, higher housing prices. It's just a mathematical relationship here. So how much of a contributor were those policies to where we are right now? First, laying the groundwork with the low interest rates, and then kind of the twin shotgun barrel of, I think collectively, if you take the monetary and the fiscal policy since March 2020, it was like over $10 trillion. So it was a lot of stimulus going into the system. I think a lot of people could look at that and say, yeah, no wonder housing sort of shot the moon. It was sort of a, you know, amazing sugar rush, you know, for the housing market and all the reasons that, you know, the housing market likes low interest rates, lots of hot money sloshing around. So how contributory were those?
this has reminded me, by the way, something that I should have started with, which is that I'm giving you my personal opinions. This doesn't represent those of anybody else affiliated with the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas or the Federal Reserve System, just to be clear.
Great, great. And let me just interrupt and say too, and I appreciate you, you may be in a delicate position here, so just answer whatever you can, but good clarification. We're just getting your opinion here.
Right, absolutely, absolutely. So I don't think I'm saying anything that we haven't written anyway already. We do believe that the combination of fiscal stimulus and monetary accommodation, which had a targeted goal, it kept the U.S. economy fairly stable in the face of what had been a very sharp shock to economic activity. Shock that in part was the result of how governments responded to the pandemic. But nonetheless, it kept the economy on a fairly good footing. As I was arguing before or hinting at before, I think most people would agree that some degree of monetary and economic support and fiscal support were necessary, that the type of monetary accommodation that the Fed conducted was consistent with its mandate. A different story is whether there are lessons to be learned about the size and the timing of some of the measures that were implemented. And I don't want to be too specific about this, but certainly this is something that would have to be looked at in great detail and dissected going forward. This is not very helpful because we want to make decisions in real time as well. So we cannot necessarily wait to have all the answers. But I do believe there is a case to be made for rethinking of the implementation side of these policies. In terms, again, as I said, of the goals, some of the goals, some of the timing and magnitude of those actions. But I leave it at that. I leave it for others to decide.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, and again, I'm not trying to do here is make a judgment call as to whether the Fed did or did not do the right thing here. It's just more, did its actions, both pre and post pandemic, contribute to this sort of excessive housing exuberance that we see now? You're nodding as I'm saying this. I'm assuming, let me give you some words in your mouth to clarify them any way you want. I think you're saying, yeah, probably did play some sort of contributory role here. Again, maybe some of it was unavoidable because we were trying to avoid basically a complete shutdown of the economy. And sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. But yes, it probably did contribute here.
This is a little bit pushing a little bit further my analogy with my medical analogies. It's a little bit like when they give you a medicine, you know you need it. There is nothing else or little else that can be done, but it has side effects. And maybe the dose, they need to tinker with the dose to get it right for you. I think that there is some to that.
All right. Well, I really appreciate you giving such a, you know, your such a best shot at answer at that question, where I know you have a lot of things that you have to kind of keep in mind when you give an answer on this topic. Kind of a related role here. Did your report at all look at the impact of institutional buyers right now? Because it looks from other data that we've looked at here, CoreLogic and other sources, it looks like the percentage of residential housing that has been being bought by investors has been steadily increasing. And the fastest growing group within that bucket has been institutional investors, hedge funds, et cetera. You know, they're able to push prices around because they can come, they've got deeper pockets, they can put down all cash offers. They're probably also the ones that benefit the most from the lowest interest rates that we've had, because they generally can borrow at lower rates than a regular, you know, retail home buyer. How big a factor has that been playing here?
First, this is an important point, actually, I want to make, which is Useful, I think some of the tools that we are proposing can be for monitoring and looking at real markets. I would not encourage anybody to make decisions on the basis of just one tool or one data series. To complement all the information with additional data and additional sources, and to get different points of view as well. So I want to be very clear about that. And I've been reminded of that for this very same reason, for your question, because this is a very interesting piece of data. We do not explicitly incorporate that in our analysis, yet it's very indicative of the potential behavior that you would expect in situations where the self-fulfilling prophecy of higher prices is driven by large investors, in part is driven by large investors searching for yield. The reality is that over the past 2 years, housing has been one of the asset classes that provides the highest return adjusted by inflation of any. I'm not surprised that that's that the evidence is pointing that it's these investors that are coming into play, and in fact we are tracking this data as well. For us, ultimately, what's critical is what the decision makers in these institutions are thinking. And what we would like to put forward is evidence that suggests that these house prices that we are seeing are unsustainable. Hopefully, if these large investors, like small buyers, families, and whatnot, start rethinking their assumptions about expected future appreciation, that can also contribute to take some of the air out of the balloon and to cool down the market. But the type of search for yield, expecting high capital gains, that might be behind some of the moves by these large investors is exactly the type of thing that we would expect to see if part of the appreciation is motivated or driven by a bubble-like behavior.
Okay, let me ask you this. So if I heard you correctly, I think I heard you say, look, we didn't look specifically at that factor in putting together this report, but it seems to reason that an influx of these type of investors coming in are probably contributing to the bubble-like activity that we're seeing here in prices. Does the Fed, and I don't know if you know this given where you are in it, but do you know, does the Fed have a point of view on institutional ownership of residential housing market? In other words, like there are concerns that people have that, hey, over time, these guys are going to outcompete the regular retail investor, and you know, you take it to an extreme, we all become this nation of renters to all these big corporations, right? There's questions people have about the societal good of that type of trajectory. There's also just sort of the systemic risk element of it too, which is when you have an institution that owns a lot of inventory, and you know, there are a number of these funds that own thousands of homes in a certain specific geography, where if they get into trouble, right? And right now, kind of while we're having this conversation in parallel, the financial markets are getting really rocky. You know, it's not inconceivable that a fund holding a big real estate portfolio could get into trouble and have to dump a bunch of units on the market all at once, which could be, you know, very disruptive to pricing in a way that nobody would want, right? So does the Federal Reserve have a point of view on this that you know of?
Well, I would not speak for or presume to speak for the Federal Reserve. I know that there is quite a bit of research on the role that institutional investors play, but that does not equate with a position. That for that, I think that's above my pay grade. You probably want to ask a policymaker to make those determinations. What I can tell you is that institutional investors are a very important part of the market. They play a large role, and they can both help the boom, sustain the boom for the reasons we were talking about earlier on, and that you mentioned, because they have very deep pockets, more than your average Joe. But they can also trigger a correction, even if you could see a rebalancing of the market without it happening. Precisely because if they get in trouble, they can dump very large amounts of housing into the market, and that has a major effect. These are players that can make the market. I'm not again saying anything about whether we should act in any particular way, whether policymakers should act in any particular way, but being aware of the importance and the ability of these players to affect market conditions is something that I know we are all aware of at the Fed.
All right, good. Thanks. Yeah, a personal opinion of mine, you know, they add to the momentum on the extremes, which is sort of what I think you were saying here. And you know, personally, a US citizen, I would love to see, you know, it really be explored and somebody on the policy side just debate, hey, at what level is this not helping things out here, right? Because given the potential extreme trajectories that I mentioned of where this could go, I don't see this as being net good for the individual homeowner, which is who we're trying to help out here in the long run. But again, look, I know that's above your pay grade. Maybe if you can help us get Jerome Powell on here to answer that question, that would be wonderful. All right, so let's get to the question. I think it's on most people's minds here, which is you wrote in the report that the run-up beyond the fundamentals will continue until, quote, investors become cautious, policymakers intervene, the flow of money into housing dries up, and a housing correction or even a bust occurs. And even though we are still kind of hanging out near all-time highs in a lot of markets around the country right now, we are beginning to see some initial signs of cooling off here, which you would expect with mortgage rates moving as much as they have so quickly, right? The stats I've been citing are 30-year fixed mortgages were trading at like average 30-year fixed mortgages was at like 2.77% last August. It's now 5.3% on average. That's almost a doubling, right? Are we seeing this investors becoming cautious, policymakers intervening, et cetera? Are we beginning to see that now with the Fed, you know, hiking interest rates and mortgages already having moved as much as possible or as much as they have? Are we already beginning to sort of see that lever begin to switch from more to less in the housing market?
Let me say a couple of things about that. One is, I actually think 2022 is going to be a very important year, a year where we need to keep a close eye on housing and real estate in the US. Because a run-up in house prices, a housing boom, or even a short-lived bubble, if you want to define it like this, like the one we've been through over the past 2 years, doesn't necessarily have to end up with a very large and disruptive correction. It can also move gradually back into balance. And part of it, I'm restating something I said earlier, will the may come from the fact that the cycle on monetary policy is contributing to take some of the air, is going to contribute to take some of the air out of the balloon. And we've talked about also how, unless Congress switches gears, it looks like the massive fiscal expansions that we've seen are behind us, not ahead of us. So that might help to cool things down a bit. One of the main reasons for us to put out there these notes is to avoid the overconfidence that, okay, we have things sorted out. Things are going to get better. We don't have to worry. And I need to get in now because housing is going to get more expensive. Interest rates are going to rise. And there is a great opportunity for capital gains here that I don't want to miss. Okay, think a bit more carefully about what would happen to your finances if you have to actually hold on to that investment for a longer period of time that you are anticipating. Think about what your expectations about future price increases are, because as I said, as I tried to indicate, all the symptoms that we are seeing in the market seem to suggest that this explosive behavior is unsustainable. And then the other thing I want to add, if you don't mind me, is I look at this sometimes as more of as an issue of risk management. And this is equally true for policymakers as for regular investors of home buyers. So it's from that point of view, and taking into account that there is a great deal of uncertainty about what 2022 is going to look like. We have the still unresolved consequences of the Ukraine war. Who knows how that's going to end up? We have signs of weakness coming from one of the big players of the global economy, like China, and so on. So there are a great deal of uncertainty that can weigh on economic conditions in the US and affect housing conditions. So taking into account all that uncertainty, I would propose two scenarios that, that might be helpful to people thinking about where housing is or might be moving forward. One is, I think, the benign scenario. And implicitly is the one that we've been talking about a lot, which is interest rates are going to rise to quell inflation. The US policymakers are able to achieve a sort of soft landing where economic activity doesn't suffer too much yet. Inflation, we break the back of inflation and we bring it back closer to the 2% target. And in this sort of a scenario, it's very conceivable that housing markets will not necessarily collapse or need to a correction, or certainly not a severe correction, that they might gradually return back to normal. And that might mean that for a period of time, you have below average real growth in house prices. That might be all it takes. That would be the benign scenario. The less benign scenario is one where monetary policy needs to get firmer than is currently anticipated to quell inflation. Inflation faces severe risks to the upside, and those materialize, and monetary policy has to respond. That might put pressure on a lot of buyers that are already feeling the impact of the 5% mortgage rates. And there is a bit of a panic. People start moving out of the market, concerned that it's too high. And if you don't leave early, you might be caught with the worst of a correction. So that can trigger the correction, and that has negative effects because housing is still one of the biggest assets for most families in the US. Aggregate demand is very sensitive, or can be sensitive to a correction in house prices. If that correction in house prices pulls back aggregate demand, economic activity declines, that has a feedback negative effect. And you can end up with a much more severe correction that you can envision. So from a risk management perspective, the concern that we want to raise is not that we think markets are necessarily headed in that direction, that real estate is headed in that direction, but that if we don't take into account these risks, we might actually inadvertently fall into that trap. And that would be bad. Or I would argue it would be bad.
All right. I think a lot of people would agree with you on that. Easy argument. I really appreciate, A, your time coming on here, but B, what you and your team have done in issuing this report. I'm going to repeat a little bit of what you just said here, but it seems like you are stepping into the role that the Fed is, I think, historically often supposed to play, right? Which is the guy who takes away the punch bowl when the party's getting a little too wild, right? And if I hear you correctly, you're saying, look, if looking at it our lens, as with the data we see and with the policies we know we're pursuing right now, there's kind of two more likely scenarios from here. One is that we're going to engineer the soft landing and the housing market's going to cool as a result. It's not going to collapse. It's going to cool, right? So therefore, you shouldn't be panic buying housing right now. But there is also a chance, might not be the dominant one, but a non-dismissible chance that we could have the hard landing version of this, right? It's going to take more aggressive action to tame inflation. Housing may come down a lot more as a result. We didn't talk a ton about this, but I did mention that the markets are already correcting from here. But if we have to go through tougher tightening policy, you know, that risks going into a recession, if there's a market correction in there as well, you have this kind of, you know, perfect storm building of, you've got the negative wealth effect of people seeing housing prices go down, so they constrain their spending more. If there's a recession, they're getting laid off. Maybe they can't afford as much house. If their retirement portfolios or investment portfolios are coming down, obviously they can afford to do less stuff. And it kind of begins to build on each other, and you get sort of that reverse FOMO, right? You get people just getting more and more fiscally conservative. So you're saying, look, that could happen here. So from a risk management standpoint, the prudent thing to do right now is to wave the caution flag and say, hey, you know, just throwing money willy-nilly into the housing market right now probably isn't the world's best idea. Is that a relatively fair way to assess it?
That's a very fair way of assessing it. And we are trying to provide some of the evidence that we are looking at to support that waving of the flag of caution. Yes.
Okay, great. So I put a little bit of words in your mouth of saying, hey, if somebody is looking to buy right now, I think you would say, you know, make it a really considered purchase. Just don't run after it expecting to flip it to another buyer in a little while. Be comfortable living in that house for maybe longer than you initially are expecting to if the market cools from here. And of course, you know, you may have some life reasons where buying the house is the right idea, but just again, make it a measured, progressive, intentional decision. Is there any other advice that you would have to today's perspective, either home buyers or home sellers?
No, I think that summarizes it, at least on the basis of the work that we've done. I wouldn't want to step in the position of a financial advisor to anybody. Other than that, perhaps I would only add that seek advice when you are making a decision like this, if you don't feel certain or comfortable with, because it's probably one of the largest and most significant decisions that an individual or a family makes in terms of their portfolio, their life implications. So seek advice, be as informed as possible. And one of the things that we try to do from the Fed is just to provide some of this additional information to make you to make it available to you so that you can make informed decisions.
All right, great. And Enrique, I don't know if you know this, but Wealthy on every video we do, basically, we encourage people to go seek professional financial advice to a lot of in making decisions in response to a lot of the big macro trends we talk about on this program. And if you're a new watcher, just go to wealthion.com. If you don't already have a good financial advisor and would like to talk for free to one of ours, they offer a free consultation. There's no strings attached, no commitment. But asking them questions about, hey, I'm thinking about buying a house. Here's my personal financial situation right now. What do you think? They're completely experienced in addressing that exact question. All right. Well, look, in beginning to wrap things up here, first, Enrique, I want to thank you. And I want to give sort of a special shout out to the Dallas Fed. I talked to a lot of experts on this program, and I will say some of the best informed ones have either currently work for or have worked at the Dallas Fed. So I'm thinking about people like Lacey Hunt. I'm thinking about people like Danielle DiMartino Booth. So I appreciate the fact that you guys are, you know, out there trying to basically arm people with information and, you know, recommending risk management. For folks that would be interested in reading the report that Enrique and his team put out, just go to wealthion.com/Fed Housing Report, all one word, and we'll show you how to get that report for free. If you have not already watched the housing video that I did, the interview that I did with Nick Gurley that I mentioned right in the intro to this one, we go super duper deep into a lot of the risk factors here. I'll put up a link to that right here. You can go watch that. It'd be a great, if you like this video, that would be a great one to watch right after this one. And if you want us to continue to see, if you want to see us continue to be bring on great experts from the outside, like senior economists and researchers from the Federal Reserve, do me a favor, hit the like button and click the subscribe button too while you're down there. All right. With that being said, Enrique, I want to thank you so much again for your time. This has been really enlightening. And I really appreciate you, you know, going out there to get the word out to people right now that, hey, you know what? It's probably prudence. It's not a bad time for that right now when you're considering the housing market.
Good word to close the conversation, prudence. Yes, indeed. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And again, folks, make sure you go get Enrique's report at wealthion.com/Fed Housing Report. Enrique, thank you very much. Everybody else, thanks so much for watching.
Thank you. We'll be right back.